This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. More of the nation's top lawmakers continue pushing for better international cooperation to rebuild Iraq, as well as more honesty from the White House. Delaware Democratic Senator Joe Biden is one of them, and he told Good Morning America earlier, President Bush needs to be more candid about the costs, casualties, and the duration of America's post-invasion commitment in Iraq.
And the president better level with us, better tell the American people so we can support him. I will support it. If they don't level, they will not get the support we need, and we need to win the peace in Iraq.
The United States and Great Britain are still exploring a possible UN resolution to encourage other nations to send troops, security trainers, and money for the reconstruction of Iraq. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan suggested last week the Security Council okay a new U.S.-led multinational force for Iraqi peacekeeping, but member France insists the U.S. hand over management of Iraqi security to a UN-led force. Six-way talks on North Korea's nuclear ambitions are in their second day today, and the United States has again ruled out holding any bilateral talks with Pyongyang to discuss the issue. More on the story from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
Host nation China is calling for restraint, warning hardline positions will only deepen the dispute and threaten peace in the region. But hopes of success are limited, as North Korea says the discussions will fail unless the United States is ready to offer a non-aggression pact. Meanwhile, Washington is insisting the communist state scraps its weapons program in a verifiable and irreversible manner. Officials from South Korea, Japan, and Russia are also taking part in the talks. The nuclear standoff began when North Korea restarted a mothballed nuclear power station, threw out inspectors from the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency, and pulled out of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Suzanne Chislett reporting.
And first-time unemployment claims are up. The Labor Department says for the week ending August 23rd, jobless claims rose by 3,000 to about 394,000.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The alleged shooter in yesterday's killing spree that left six people dead, including the gunman in a Chicago auto parts warehouse, already had a lengthy criminal record. Salvador Tapia, who was shot and killed by police at the scene, has been described as a disgruntled former employee with a criminal history that included drug-related and violent crimes. The shooting is being called all the more tragic today because three of the victims were from the same family. One of the company's owners, his brother, and his nephew were all killed in that shooting spree. Another owner of the company escaped the rampage because he'd been late to work because he was stuck in traffic.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Powell, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
A joint U.S. and Canadian task force met for the first time yesterday to map out its investigation into this month's blackout that affected a lot of the northeast U.S. and southeastern Canada. More from reporter Steve Sandberg.
34,000 miles of transmission lines, hundreds of generating units, and they all went out across the northeast and Canada in 9 seconds. Now a joint U.S. and Canadian task force is sifting through the data with three goals in mind, according to U.S. Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham.
On what happened, to why it happened, and cascaded. And third, what are the kinds of immediate recommendations that need to be put into effect in order to prevent this type of outage from happening again?
Officials say it'll take weeks before they have any concrete answers. Steve Sandberg in Princeton, New Jersey.
And it looks like California was just the beginning. The idea of recalling the governor has spread to Nevada. Opponents of Republican Kenny Guid have filed paperwork now to begin the process of officially booting him from office. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Your car coughing, sputtering, riding rough? Think your service center has one magic machine that checks everything? Oh, no. One size doesn't fit all. When I come back, I'll give you the scope. The scoop.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
Just like in a doctor's office, different diagnostic tools are used for different symptoms in service centers. A scope performs an EKG on your car's electrical system and checks engine functions as it runs, just like a patient on a treadmill. A scanner, on the other hand, talks with car's onboard computers and sensors, like getting a patient history. But if your car has new noises, hard steering, bumpy ride, or vibrating brakes, you don't need a machine test. You need a doctor, a qualified, experienced technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. We have unusual show open music this morning for you, a nice change of pace. Just moments ago, one of the folks, Braintrub, in our chat room. If you want to drop into the chat room, by the way, and participate or observe some of the most interesting, fascinating, thoughtful, insightful, knowledgeable, discussion that goes on live out there on the entire internet. Go to tomhartman.com and click on the link to the radio show and then click on the chat room link, and that takes you to the trade form on CompuServe. Click the chat room button and boom, you're in, and you'll have this conversation. So anyhow, Braintrub says, have you seen this article? This was 5 minutes ago because I logged onto the chat room before we got on the air. And he gave me the URL. I looked at it. I just printed this thing out. I had missed this. Apparently, it's from yesterday's Los Angeles Times, or today, actually, posted Thursday, August 28th. Bob Drogon's article, U.S. Misled by Bogus Pre-War Intelligence. Here, now, this is amazing. I'll just read you part of it. Frustrated at the failure to find Saddam Hussein's suspected stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons, Allied intelligence agencies have launched a major effort to determine if they were victims of bogus Iraqi defectors who planted disinformation to mislead the West before the war. Now, let's get this right. Paul Wolfowitz, in that interview with Vanity Fair magazine, said, well, you know, we had a lot of good reasons to go into Iraq. I'm not quoting here. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the exact quote in front of me. But essentially, he said, we have a lot of good reasons to go into Iraq. Saddam's a bad guy. It'll stabilize the Middle East. It'll help Israel. It'll get oil flowing. It'll stabilize our economy. You know, I don't know that he went through the list. But, the administration thought they had a lot of good reasons. And he basically said the whole weapons of mass destruction thing was the one that was trotted out because it was the most marketable. Not because it was the most true. And we know that Dick Cheney created his, or Don Rumsfeld, rather, created his own intelligence agency within the Defense Department to pull together data and reject stuff that didn't. So these guys were dancing to their own tune. And now, and frankly, I don't think that they ever expected that anybody would hold them accountable. Or maybe they really and truly believed there was stuff over there. I kind of doubt it, though, because they had some of the top scientists on the planet working for the United Nations, aggressively
searching all over Iraq for this stuff and finding not only no evidence of it, but substantial evidence that it had all been destroyed. And you add that to the fact that they knew that it was the Bush senior administration that had provided the funds and, in many cases, the actual raw materials for weapons of mass destruction back, you know, when Saddam was our friend, when he was fighting against Iran. And, in fact, Rumsfeld made two trips to Iraq back then. And they knew that this stuff has a shelf life of only a couple of years. After 2, 3, 4, 5 years, VX, sarin, virtually all of the nerve agents except mustard gas become completely useless after about 4 years. And everybody knew there was no way that he had gotten any of that stuff into the country since 91, which was 12 years ago. So, but now, you know, now the blame game begins. It just gets wilder and wilder. Intelligence officials now, this from this article in the LA Times, intelligence officials now fear key portions of the pre-war intelligence may have been flawed. They now fear it? I mean, back before we went to war, there were people within the United States military, within the United States intelligence community, James Baker, you know, saying, no, don't do it. This information is... So now, you know, it's this. One of the folks in the forum said, "Well, next we're going to hear from Bush that his dog ate the counter evidence." So here's what it's going to boil down to. And in fact, next to the last paragraph of this article, officials say former Iraqi intelligence operatives have confirmed since the war that Saddam's regime sent agents disguised as defectors to the West to plant fabricated intelligence. In other words, Baghdad apparently tricked legitimate defectors into funneling phony tips about weapons production and storage sites. Now, let me get this straight. This administration is now asking us to believe that Saddam sent his own agents over here to the United States to convince us that he had weapons of mass destruction so that we would attack him. It doesn't quite make sense to me. I suppose it is possible. I will give them this. It is possible that Saddam actually did want people in the region, certainly, to think that he had weapons of mass destruction because it would keep them from attacking him. He had complied with the United Nations requirements to destroy the weapons of mass destruction, and he was open about that. You remember those the guys on TV, what's his name, the number two guy in the Saddam regime? This was before the war, saying, in fact, this was back before the 2002 elections when they started this thing back just before the 2002 elections, putting this on the table and all these protests and everything so that they could paint Democrats as anti-patriotic because they were opposed to a war. I mean, you know, Bush really understands the divide and conquer technique. And way back then, there were people saying no. But anyhow, I would say that maybe, yeah, it's entirely possible that Saddam wanted some people, particularly Syria and Israel, I suppose, and Iran, who he viewed as threats, he wanted them to think that he might have the ability to retaliate. But he had, at the same time, I mean, his own vice president was going on TV going, hey, we really did destroy all this stuff. We got a big army if somebody wants to come and try and get us. You know, that was kind of the... So, well, and the other thing that I'll grant them is that there is some evidence that there was somebody pumping false intelligence at the United States government. That guy was named Ahmed Chalabi, who is now the head of Iraq. The multimillionaire, former convicted felon for bank fraud that this administration pulled out of storage and dusted off, hadn't been in Iraq in decades, took him out of his penthouse apartment in, as I recall, in London, and sent him down there. And he was really working the crowd there in Washington, D.C. for a while. It's incredible. When is this administration going to tell us the truth? When are they going to tell us the truth? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And John in Long Beach, California is on the line. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
I sent an email to a group I belong to this morning before when I first got up after I saw the LA Times. I said, If you want to start out the day with a good laugh, go to the L.A. Times front page, preface if you haven't already, and read U.S. suspects it received false Iraq arms tips. Of course, yeah. It is all Saddam's fault. I guess they got tired of blaming Clinton, although
right.
I suspect they may get around to that later.
They'll figure out a way to make sure that, well, Saddam did it because Clinton encouraged him to.
I mean, this is so insane. Yeah. I mean, it's just totally, I don't know.
It's really tragic.
I get at a loss for words.
I think it's tragic, John. I think it's embarrassing to us as a nation. It is harmful to democracy. This is certainly not helping our troops who are over there in harm's way. I mean, think of the troop morale that you know, these guys are over there knowing, most of them know somebody who's been killed. I mean, we had another two killed last night, and they believed that they went over there to save the world and to save America from the immediate and imminent threat of Saddam Hussein and his weapons of mass destruction. And now the government is saying, well, you know, we were deceived.
Yeah.
It's like Larry Curley and Moe here.
You know, another thing, too, you cannot believe, to any extent, any of the polls coming from the mainstream media.
Yeah.
You just can't, because they twist those things to mean to come out with whatever results they want them to. And I don't know about you, but everybody I know, I would say 9 out of 10 people that I know, either intensely dislike or hate Bush.
Well, what's remarkable to me, John, is the number of people that I know who are Republicans or who consider themselves conservatives who are bailing out of the sinking ship like rats, you know, at the dock as the thing is going down below the surface. I mean, it's just incredible. They're running for cover.
One other thing before I go, Tom, I'd like to say, if we are able to get these people out at 204, I think a lot of them really won't care because they will have accomplished a lot of the things they set out to accomplish. And it will take years, if ever, to undo a lot of the things, most of the damage they have caused.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you, John, and thanks for the call. I appreciate the comment. You look at these statistics here with this budget deficit. I mean, we're dumping something huge on our children and our grandchildren, and we may well be wiping out the ability of this government to care for the baby boomers when they retire. And being one, I have some concerns about that, too. Another email here I got, and then I want to get into this thing about the progressive tax system and, you know, what economics. I want to keep coming back to these topics, like economics, because it's so important that we all understand this stuff, that we have a consistent and clear understanding of why, for example, should a tax system be progressive? Why should the rich pay more in taxes as a percentage of their income than the poor? I mean, this is the thing that the conservatives, the cons, have been putting this thing on the table for years now, saying it's just not fair. Why should somebody who makes $10 million pay a higher percentage of tax than somebody who makes $10,000? And I want to get into the answering that question. But first, just a couple of things here from the news. I got this in the mail from Mark Rassicut. I don't know. He's the chairman of the Bush-Cheney 04 campaign. And, dear Thomas, if you support President Bush's strong leadership, if you're grateful that he and Laura have restored honor and dignity to the White House, if you believe it's important for America and the world that he and Dick Cheney have 4 more years in office, then I hope you will let me send you a charter membership card identifying you as one of the president's key supporters. Please activate it by making a campaign gift of $2,000, $1,000, $500, $250, $100, or even $50 today at georgewbush.com/charter member using the campaign secure server. It's critical to the president to make your charter membership gift to his campaign now, for while he's focused on his great responsibilities, winning the war against terrorism and strengthening our economy, he's counting on you and me to get his grassroots campaign off to a strong start, Thomas. I thought he was focusing on his month-long vacation down in Texas and his fundraising, but apparently they know something I don't. And then they go on to say, and this is where it gets really wild, Democrats and their allies will have more money to spend attacking the president during the nomination battle than we will have to defend him. a few other fascinating clips from the Republicans today. And we got Mike on the line. Mike, we'll pick your call up right after the break here. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Summer's almost over, and you know what that means. Time to get into cool Labor Day deals at Radio Shack. Get 10% off anything in the store now through Labor Day when you open a new Radio Shack Answers Plus credit card account. Use it to buy cool stuff like wireless phones with built-in cameras, computers, and MP3 players. Applying is easy, so beat the heat by saving some cold cash at Radio Shack.
10% discount on qualified purchases paid with newly approved Radio Shack Answers Plus credit card through 9103 at participating stores. Services, phone orders, online, and special orders excluded may not be combined with any other discount offer. Void where prohibited.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of progressive talk radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that. On the eve of destruction again, and he's got the knack. He's the cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. He come into town with a chip on his shoulder. His cowboy boots made him feel tall. He said, by proclamation, now there's a new order, and I am the fiercest leader of all. He wore a pair of six shooters, a bowie knife and a rifle, and a derringer stashed in his boot. He said, y'all drop your
How
weapons.
How did it look like a derringer stashed in his boot when he jumped off that aircraft carrier? I'm not sure. This is Tom Hartman. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stream 145 on the Sirius satellite radio system. Broadcasting live on the internet at radiopower.org, IEAmericaRadio.com, Live365.com. And, of course, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast. Our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. I got a couple of real hoots here from this Bush-Cheney fundraising letter. But first, let's bring in Mike in Washington, D.C. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Hey, Mike, I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Frustrated.
Okay.
Got a,
what is it?
A doubleheader here.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I was watching the local news last night, and they were talking about one of the poor guys from the National Guard in D.C. who was offed over in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And they started the report with, you know, this brave young soldier who died defending America, and I almost fell out the window, going, excuse me, are the Iraqis boiling across the border and I don't know it? Have they shelled New York or San Francisco recently? How in God's name are you defending somebody when you're murdering people in their own country?
Well, I think there's two or three Iraqis who are massing on the Toronto border of last year.
Yeah, I think they were trying to get out of this country, though, wasn't it?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And secondly, one of the next items was this lunatic McCain going, well, we need to send more troops over there.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, excuse me. Did you spend too much time in the prison camp or not enough?
Yeah.
Do you want to do this again?
Well, you know, yeah, Mike, and we have to realize that you know, we have created a horrible, horrible mess in somebody else's backyard, and we have some responsibility to clean it up. I don't think that we need troops. I think we need police, or Iraq does. But whether they, you know, where they come from or how it gets done, you know, it's got to be done.
Well, the thing is, they don't want us to clean it up. They are saying, thank you very much, leave. We'll clean it up. And I kind of think they have the right to ask us that.
Yeah, the problem is, who's the they?
The people who live there.
Is the they the 60% Shiite majority who want to create a new Islamic theocracy like they have in Iran? Or is the Sunni minority who also wants to create a theocracy
We've created that mess, and no matter which way we decide, we're going to lose. It's just
the mess got created back in the 1920s by the British, who took three completely separate nations, essentially tribal areas, and glommed them together. Actually, four. Originally, Kuwait was part of it too,
exactly.
And kind of smacked them all together and said, boom, instant country.
And also, I mean, this is another thing. As you point out, Kuwait was part of their country, and yet during Gulf War I, we were laughing at the Iraqis saying, well, how dare you say that Kuwait, an independent nation, is part of your country? It was. That's one thing. At one point, it was. Secondly, the British were the ones that came in there and, gee, what were they doing? Using poison gas against the Iraqis.
Oh, really?
Yes, they did.
In the 20s and 30s. Remarkable. Mike, that music means we've run out of time on this segment. Thank you for your call, and thank you for sharing your comments and thoughts. Neither separation of powers nor the need for confidentiality can sustain unqualified presidential immunity from the judicial process. United States versus Nixon, 1974. Our quote for the day. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton. Nearly 4 weeks after their old contracts expired, two unions representing workers at telephone giant Verizon appear to be nearing a deal. But for now, union negotiators with the Communications Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers are content to remain in negotiations. Verizon has hired hundreds of strikebreakers in case of a walkout and has been keeping them furloughed at great expense in hotel rooms. No details of the talks have yet emerged, though negotiations are rumored to have stalled over the issue of union membership for employees of Verizon's sister company, Verizon Wireless.
At least two dozen people were injured in violent clashes with police in the Honduran capital of Tegucigalpa yesterday after the government announced plans to freeze public sector wages and weaken labor laws in order to secure a $1 billion loan from the International Monetary Fund. That spurred more than 12,000 people to take to the streets. Lawmakers have already opened up parts of the country's waterworks to private investment at the behest of the IMF. The protesters blocked all roads leading into the capital and barricaded major intersections for most of the day. President Ricardo Maduro says he will not back down from the IMF compromises because Honduras really needs the money.
A disgruntled worker in a South Chicago auto parts warehouse went on a rampage yesterday, killing six of his co-workers and himself. Salvador Tapia was reportedly about to lose his job when he returned to work with an assault rifle, spraying fellow employees with a hail of bullets. It's not clear whether Tapia was brought down by police or turned the gun on himself. The incident comes only 11 weeks after a Lockheed Martin employee in Meridian, Mississippi, took the lives of eight co-workers in a similar incident. It's the second such workplace shooting in Chicago in only 2.5 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
People get ready, there's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board.
And welcome back, it's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Dear Thomas, says the letter from the Bush-Cheney 04 campaign at www.georgewbush.com, if you need more convincing the president needs your help, consider what the Democrats are saying. John Kerry claims President Bush is, quote, America's children, end quote. He compared the president to Saddam Hussein, saying America needs a, quote, regime change, end quote, just like Iraq did. How dare he? Here's another. Howard Dean, I'm reading to you from a fundraising letter that the Republicans sent me this morning. Howard Dean said he's heard the president might suspend the 2004 elections, called him reckless and despicable, compared our president to the Taliban, and said that George Bush was trying to, quote, destroy Social Security, Medicare, our public schools, and public services, end quote. How dare he? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Jim in St. Louis, Missouri, I assume, is on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I am great. How are you, Jim?
Well, good. You know, your guest yesterday, I thought, had some very disturbing information about what's going on. And, you know, and I'm convinced the media is a big, big part of the problem. And I believe that we've got to focus on the media and see if you know, we got to get the truth out some way. And, you know, I'm kind of confused of how we're going to have to go about doing this. But
well, I have some suggestions.
Have you interviewed Katrina VandenHeuvel? Have you ever interviewed her on your program?
I have to admit I'm not familiar with her name.
That's she's the editor of Nation magazine.
Uh-huh. Oh, she would be good.
Oh, she is very informed. And anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there, and I appreciate your program so much. And
well,
just
thank you, Jim.
If you might speak to that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I'll do it. Jim, thank you very, very kindly. I appreciate your comments. I made a note of her name. And with regard to taking back the media, I think that there's some very specific and direct things that we can do. During the and leading up to the Revolutionary War period, from largely 1773 to 1776, when there was a huge debate going on in the United States over whether or not we should separate from Great Britain and become an independent republic, those who were in favor of independence found it very hard often to get their side of the story told in the media, because most of the newspapers that were owned in the United States in that period up till 1776 were owned by what they called loyalists, by business people who didn't want the boat to be rocked. They didn't want things to fall apart. They wanted, you know, they liked stability. They wanted things to remain as they were. And so they, you know, they, war, we don't want a war. I mean, we could lose our business. We could, you know, our place could be burned down. We're making a good living here with our newspaper. And so what the founders did was they put together committees of correspondence. And what the committees of correspondence were, this was a fancy phrase for a letter writing group. And they had these trees, as it were, where they would write letters to the editor of various newspapers, and the newspapers, even if their official stance, even if their editorial stance, even if their news bias was to be was not to separate from England, nonetheless, they felt that they had an obligation to print letters to the editor, no matter how crackpot they were, and they did, and they still do to this day. And so, during the Revolutionary era, and then this came back again with the women's suffrage movement. And this was one of the major tools of the women's suffrage movement throughout the late 19th century and into the early 20th century, leading up to the passage of the, I think it's the 20th Amendment. It was in 1920. Maybe it was the 20th. Anyway, the Women's Right to Vote Amendment. And the women's suffrage movement heavily used committees of correspondence. And we saw it again during the anti-Vietnam War era. Those of you who are old enough to remember, there were actually organized committees of correspondence, people who were organizing to write letters to the editors of the newspapers. Now, the Republican Party is trying to do this right now. If you go to georgewbush.com, you can log on, and you can use this website has this neat little tool where you can submit a letter, and of course they give you the suggested language, but you can customize it, and you can submit a letter to local newspapers all over the country. It's really quite remarkable. And so, number one, Jim, I suggest that we recreate our committees of correspondence. Number two, encourage liberal media. Subscribe. You know, if you like the Nation magazine, subscribe to it. If there are publications out there that you think are doing a good job of presenting a wide range of viewpoints, support them. When you contact their advertisers, say, hey, you know, I'm buying this product from you because I saw your ad in Nation magazine, or I heard you on IE America Radio, or I heard you on this radio station. If you happen to be listening to this program or others like it on IE or other media on the Internet rather than on a local radio station, contact your local radio stations and tell them you'd like to hear the station. If you're listening to this on a local station, patronize the sponsors. Very straightforward stuff, really. I don't think it's all that complicated. And the cons started doing this in the 80s aggressively. You know, the huge subsidies that were used to get the Rush Limbaugh program on the air, for example, and that are to this day, you know, Reverend Moon's newspaper, The Washington Times, is still being subsidized by him. I mean, it's hundreds of millions of dollars later. Fox News was heavily subsidized for years and years and years. To this day, some of the most famous of the right-wing talk radio programs are heavily subsidized in many markets. I mean, they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to get these things carried on the air. So there has been a campaign on the right to take over the media, and they've been largely successful. And while the left doesn't, in my experience, doesn't have the cash that the right does, I don't think that we have these wealthy, you know, the Richard Mellon scapes on the left. But we do have more people. There are far more people in the United States who identify themselves as middle of the road or Democrats or liberals or progressives than there are who identify themselves as conservatives. A conservative is about 25% of the population of the United States. And that's way up from 13, 14, 15% before Rush Limbaugh. So you see that there has been a positive effect for them of that. We need to be doing the same. Back to this fundraising letter. Dick Gephardt. I'm reading again from this fundraising letter I got this morning from georgewbush.com.
Dick Gephardt says the president's, quote, phony macho business is not getting us where we need to be, end quote. Bob Graham claw-talked impeachment, accusing the president of secrecy and manipulation. John Edwards said the president's plans will corrupt the American economy. Joe Lieberman said President Bush has made us weaker, and that George Bush was, quote, nearly as dangerous to our long-term security as Iraqi militants, end quote. The Democratic National Committee depicted the president as a, quote, madman, end quote. And another National Democrat leader attacked the president as, quote, the village idiot from Texas, end quote.
They wrap this thing up by saying, and the president needs your help to overcome these assaults and others that lie ahead, so please send whatever you can afford today. They're running scared, I'm telling you. They are, these folks are really worried. And what really worries them is that Howard Dean and many of the other Democratic candidates, but Dean has turned, and I'm not saying this is a plug for Dean, and by the way, we got into this the other day, and I just want to be right up front. I think Dennis Kucinich is a great guy and wonderful, and I agree with almost everything he says, and I would totally support him. And I also, just be on the record, I will vote for anybody who is not George Bush in this next election. I think it's that important that we at least begin to chart a course back to the middle. But in any case, Howard Dean has been so successful with his fundraising on the Internet. And, I mean, thousands of people turning out. He shows up in a town and, boom, instant crowd. And what has the Republicans and the cons in particular so worried is that the old way of doing business in politics that has held really since the Gilded Age in the United States, of taking money from rich people and big corporations and using that money to basically buy political office, looks like it might be in danger. It might be threatened by the Internet, of all things. Or beyond that, I mean, even the worst nightmare for them is that it's not just that it's the Internet, but that people, individual people who maybe haven't even voted in the last few election cycles, are actually angry enough, upset enough, concerned enough that they're showing up, they're participating, they're dragging their friends, they're going to these meetup things, and they're sending in $25. You know, Dean has raised $7, $8, $9 million now, and the average donation, as I recall, is $38. That's what's got them running scared. That's what has them very running scared. Berlusconi alert! Ta-ta-da! President Vladimir Putin dropped anchor next to luxurious yachts off Sardinia in preparation for his weekend visit with the Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi.
Silvio Berlusconi, you will recall, was the small-time mafia-connected businessman who started leaning on people and bribing judges and whatnot, built a small media empire, a radio television station, turned it into a network, bought out another network, and now, well, and then reached the point where he owned all of the radio and television networks in Italy, with the exception of the one state-owned network, which he considers his sworn and eternal enemy. And once he owned all the networks, he ran for prime minister! And guess what? He won. A cautionary tale. Anyhow, this story from today's New York Times. Mr. Putin is to arrive tomorrow for an informal visit at Villa Certosa, Mr. Berlusconi's summer retreat, which reportedly boasts a cactus garden planted in the shape of a Roman amphitheater. Mr. Putin, whose two teenage daughters were guests at the villa last year, will be wined and dined in style. Italian news agencies reported that Andrea Bocelli, who is, in my opinion, one of the most brilliant vocalists in history, Andrea Bocelli, the pop tenor sensation, would sing at an extravagant dinner on Saturday. And on it goes. And the last thing, we'll get into this progressive tax thing in the next hour. There's one other thing here that I want to share with you. And from today's news, and this, in my mind, this is, I'm going to juxtapose two things. I'm just going to lay out here two news stories and let you draw your conclusions about whether there's a connection. The first, these are both from today's New York Times. The first is titled, Nigerian Woman Faces Stoning Appeals for Leniency. A tearful, and this is a byline, Katsina, Nigeria. Katsina, Nigeria. A tearful 32-year-old woman nursed her daughter in an Islamic appeals court as lawyers pleaded today that she be spared death by stoning for having sex outside marriage. I've never been this afraid, Miss Lawai said, tears rolling down her face as she made her way into the courthouse. Ms. Lawai, who was divorced about 4 years ago, was convicted in March 2002 of having sex outside marriage. This wasn't adultery. She was already divorced. She was convicted of having sex when she wasn't married. The Sharia judges ordered Ms. Lawai be buried up to her neck in sand and stoned to death. The man said to be the father of the baby denied responsibility and was acquitted. Today, a Sharia prosecutor argued that Mrs. Lawal's pregnancy and divorce status were, quote, enough evidence of a crime. There is no other excuse that is acceptable, he told the court. They will rule on September 25th whether this woman will be buried to her neck in sand and stoned to death or not for the crime of having sex when she was not married. Now let me read you the other story that I think is the perfect juxtaposition for this. This also from the front page of the National Report of today's New York Times. Dozens of protesters watched, furious and helpless, from behind the locked glass doors of the courthouse. The headline on this article, Monument is now out of sight, but not out of mind. As the workers readied the monument, a preacher belted out, "Pray the wheels collapse!" After they did not, protesters started screaming, "Bring the monument back! Bring the monument back!" The Reverend Patrick Mahoney, director of the Christian Defense Coalition, said, "We're going to call everybody we know and tell them to come to Montgomery to look inside that empty building and see what the future of America looks like." The future of America, indeed. The Taliban is alive and well, my friends. They are taking back Afghanistan, and they are trying to take America. On our website at Tom Hartman, you go to tomhartman.com and click over to the radio show part of the website. Other parts of it are devoted to the books that I've written. There is, on the when you get to the radio show part, you can also get there by going to liberaltalkradio.com or progressivetalkradio.com. We have a list of my 10 steps to restore democracy to America. 10 things that we can do to restore democracy to America. And number 4 is the one I want to focus on for the next little bit here. Number four, a strong middle class is vital to democracy. This is so. In 1792, James Madison defined government's role in promoting an American middle class. He said, and I quote, James Madison, father of the Constitution, quote, by the silent operation of the laws which, without violating the rights of property, reduce extreme wealth toward a state of mediocrity and raise extreme indigence toward a state of comfort, end quote. He suggested that a middle class could be brought about by some sort of an equalizing process. Is there some benefit to democracy in doing this, or is this socialism or communism or some other ism, some sort of terrible thing? Let's get into that. Let's look at this issue. 1-800-TALK-YES, by the way, is our number if you have thoughts on it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Get the good stuff.
Right now would be a good time to come into Napa Auto Parts, because you can get a Napa 65-month power battery for just $39.99 with exchange. This is the good stuff, manufactured to the highest industry standards. Remember, summer heat is even tougher on your battery than the cold. If your battery isn't getting the job done, get it taken care of now before you hit the road this summer. And at just $39.99, the Napa power battery is definitely the way to go.
Get the good stuff.
Napa. Get the good stuff.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued by
them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals Whale. And what your animals Whale. Do to you. Seal. Mark, Tardis. Donna, and Dr. Back. Brad answer we'll all your back. Animal questions Zebra. From A to Z. Iguana. Sunday Jaguar. Nights on IE America Minx. Radio Narwhal. Network.
Ostrich. Right,
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Come
firebound.
Zebra.
Tom Hartman.
Hartman Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troops' lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
This
in
is
a
what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talking about, does a progressive tax system help or harm democracy? Here in today's news, just the hook to hang this thing on, from the New York Times, President Bush said today that he would limit raises for 1.8 million federal workers to 2% next year to avoid a further squeeze on the budget. Now, keep in mind, the inflation rate right now is about 3%. It was like 2.98% last month, right around 3%, and has been for the last few years. So what that means is that all of us are being kicked up into higher and higher tax brackets at the rate of 3% per year. Government loves this because we all start making higher quantities of money without any increased purchasing power, but we have to pay higher taxes on it. And that's where we're going to go with this topic here. But the bottom line is that if the inflation rate is 3% and your pay raise is 2%, you're really getting a 1% pay reduction. This is why workers today are making less than they were in 1973. That was the last year of the steady and sustained, from 1935 until 1973, there was a steady, sustained increase. In 73, it started to flatten out. And by 1980, by the early 1980s, it was going into negative territory, and it's been there ever since. It upticked a little bit during Clinton's administration, but then after NAFTA and GATT, right back down. Now, here's Bush's rationale for limiting federal workers to a 2% raise. He said that if they allowed the 2.7% raise that they were supposed to get, which would just keep them even with inflation, it would cost $11 billion. And, quote, such cost increases would threaten our efforts against terrorism or force deep cuts in discretionary spending or federal employment to stay within our budget. Neither outcome is acceptable, end quote. We'll have tax cuts for rich folks, but we will not have pay raises, or we will not even keep steady the pay of our federal employees. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be back right after the news.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
truth seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The Bush administration is signaling now it may accept a United Nations force in Iraq. Still, U.S. demands to keep control of any security force there will likely keep other nations from signing on. More on the story from correspondent Lori Yama.
Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage says one idea being explored is a U.N. force led by a U.S. commander. But it's not clear how great a role the U.N. would have in any U.S. proposal. The Bush administration has kept tight control over not only military operations, but also political and economic development in Iraq, and diplomats at the UN are said to be skeptical that in any U.S. proposal, the UN will be more than a fig leaf for U.S. operations. Lori Yama, Washington.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair is still denying his government, quote, sexed up an intelligence report on Iraq's weapons capabilities. He says if the BBC accusations were in fact true, he would have resigned his post. Blair has been testifying at an inquiry into the suicide of the scientist who'd been named as the main source for that report. David Kelly killed himself shortly after being exposed as the source for the BBC reporter's claims the British government exaggerated its September 2002 dossier on Iraqi weapons. Day two of multilateral talks on North Korea's apparent nuclear ambitions are underway in Beijing. Washington has ruled out any bilateral discussions with the North's leadership, although State Department Deputy Spokesman Philip Reeker acknowledges some informal two-way discussions have taken place.
Assistant Secretary Kelly had an informal exchange with North Korean representatives in the plenary meeting room at the end of the day, and there will not be any separate formal bilateral meetings with the North Koreans as a result, as we've also said before.
Although the fact any talks are taking place at all is seen as a positive sign, it appears neither the U.S. nor North Korea are willing to compromise. The representatives from the six nations have gathered in China in a bid to end the 10-month impasse since Pyongyang confirmed it had restarted a nuclear reactor.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
You may not believe it, but relief from high prices at the gas pump could be on the way. The Energy Information Administration says prices should be down in the next few weeks since demand usually drops off after Labor Day weekend. Still, the nationwide average for a gallon of regular unleaded shot up 12 cents last week to $1.75. New weekly unemployment claims are up. Meanwhile, the Labor Department says for the week ending August 23rd, jobless claims rose by 3,000 to 394,000. That's still, however, below the 400,000 mark, which is considered to be a sign of a soft labor market.
Summer's almost over, and you know what that means? Time to get into cool Labor Day deals at Radio Shack. Get 10% off anything in the store now through Labor Day when you open a new Radio Shack Answers Plus credit card account. Use it to buy cool stuff like wireless phones with built-in cameras, computers, and MP3 players. Applying is easy, so beat the heat by saving some cold cash at Radio Shack.
10% discount on qualified purchases paid with newly approved Radio Shack Answers Plus credit card through 9103 at participating stores. Services, phone orders, online, and special orders excluded may not be combined with any other discount offer, void where prohibited.
Iran's foreign minister says his government will, in fact, start talks with the United Nations now about inspections of his country's nuclear sites. The International Atomic Energy Agency has released a report saying it cannot confirm whether or not Tehran was producing enriched uranium that could in turn be used in producing nuclear weapons. Middle East correspondent Roxana Saberi has more from Tehran.
Iran's foreign minister has said Tehran will start talks with UN officials about allowing international inspectors to make unannounced visits to Iran's nuclear sites. The UN has asked Iran to sign the agreement amid accusations Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons. In June, UN inspectors had reported that Iran had failed to disclose nuclear materials and activities as required by its current international obligations. If Iran agrees to sign the extra agreement, it may pave the way for Japan to sign a $2.5 billion contract to develop Iran's biggest oil field. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Name some things that are different. Apples, oranges, men, women, football, soccer. How about tune-ups? If you think they're all the same, think again. And when I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
Why does your tune-up cost $500, but your neighbor's only $100? Apples and oranges. Although symptoms in two vehicles are similar, actual problems can vary dramatically. Here's what I mean. Your neighbor's V8 engine is running on 7 cylinders due to a bad plug wire. Tune-up cost $100. Your V8 engine's also running on 7 cylinders, but it's due to a burned valve. Tune-up cost 5 times $100. My advice? Investigate the diagnosis before you relegate your wallet. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, streaming from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming live on the internet from radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, this network's website, and live365.com with archives at whiterosesociety.org. If you want to drop into our chat room, go to liberaltalkradio.com. And just click on the link to the chat room, and it'll take you to the trade forum on CompuServe. Click the chat link, and boom, you're there. You're in. Does a progressive tax system help or harm democracy? Well, first of all, we've got this odd little situation here. And this is really, you know, of George Bush saying that giving federal workers, 1.8 million federal workers, the pay raise that is mandated to them under law. So this is there's a formula that's there that has to do with the inflation rate and everything. And if the president didn't take this act by August 31st and Congress didn't specifically say pay them this or that, then automatically they get a 2.7% pay raise. And so the president just today said, nope, 2%. even though the inflation rate is about 3%. So we're going to give federal workers a 1% pay cut. And this is the same time that Grover Norquist and his crowd are running around the airwaves on all the on faux news network and the right-wing talk show host circuit and the right-wing TV show circuit. Don't you find it interesting, by the way, how even the Sunday morning news shows, they have on a conservative, you know, somebody from the Heritage Foundation or the American Enterprise Institute, you know, one of these right-wing bunches, you know, funded by Moonies or by SCAFE or whatnot. And then they'll have on, for balance, somebody from Time Magazine or Newsweek who's representing the middle. Where's the liberal? Every time you see one of these setups on one of these shows, but they got some extreme right-winger on there, and then somebody in the middle to balance them, I would suggest that you call the network and say, or send them an email, all these shows have websites, send them an email saying, you know, if you're going to have somebody that far off to the right, how about having somebody that far off to the left? Let's have some balance here. Because what they end up with is they get this guy in the middle wanting to talk about the here's the situation. The inflation rate is actually 3%. And the guy on the right goes, that's terrible. We got to stop with the United States government is being held hostage by these federal employees, by their unions. And the person in the middle says, we do have a lot of unionized workers. And the person in the middle never makes an argument. And these right wingers, these cons, just get the most outrageous stuff out. Anyway, pardon the rant here. Does a progressive tax system help or harm democracy? First of all, there have been numerous attempts, in addition to the progressive tax system, in other systems outside of the system of taxation, to redistribute income or equalize incomes in the United States. Why? Why is it that in the civil service system, the most highly paid person in a government position cannot make more than, now, I don't know the statistics as of 2002 or 2003, but back 15 years ago when I was very conversant in this stuff, it was 10 to 1. I hear that it's changed either 15 to 1 or 20 to 1, but even there you got this very specific limit. In the civil service system and in the military, the most highly paid person cannot make more than, let's say 20 to 1, more than 20 times more than the most lowly paid person. I think it may still be 10 to 1, but it's somewhere in that range. Whereas in business, I mean, we've got situations right now where we have CEOs who are making, you know, a million times more. Or hundreds of thousands, let's say hundreds of thousands of times. Somebody like Eisner is making hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and you compare that with, you know, a janitor at Disney who's making $10,000 or $12,000 or something like that. The ratio is startling. It's not 20 to 1. Why is it that colleges have the same thing? The head of the college can't make more than 20 times the most lowly paid janitor. Why is it that many nonprofits have this, and at one time it was a nonprofit law in many states that there had to be this clear definition of upper limits to income? Why is it that the United States Congress passed a law 3 or 4 years ago saying that only the first $1 million of executive compensation in a corporation is tax deductible to the corporation? If they want to pay an executive more than $1 million, they're going to have to pay income tax on that money. Which, of course, led to the intent, obviously, was to reduce CEO pay to $1 million a year as a ceiling. But the way corporations got around that was by other secondary compensation strategies, paying CEOs with stock options, bonuses. Yeah, they came up with all these things. But the core question here is Jack Welch at GE making tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in the course of his career. is he so much more, is that income for him representing a contribution to society or a contribution even to General Electric that is so much more than that of an individual worker working on a factory floor? And of course, the conservative position on this is yes. Whatever he makes, that's the market indicating that that's what he's worth. And I would say that's nonsense. That what he makes, is an indication of how rigged the system is on his behalf. The CEO compensation committees in most corporations these days are stacked with buddies of the CEO. In fact, most of them nowadays are stacked with CEOs from other corporations. They're all coming up with each other's pay. It's the multimillionaires club. And it bears no relationship to what their contribution is to the company or to society. And you can demonstrate that simply by looking at the fact that up until about 15 or 20 years ago, up until basically the Reagan-Bush era, when we had this moral shift, which has led to an economic disaster in the United States, that said, you know, the rich getting richer is just fine. The poor will somehow be taken care of. Don't worry. Voodoo economics, trickle-down economics. And we shifted to this neo-Darwinian social evolutionary economic theory that held ascendancy back during the Gilded Age for about 20, 30 years there and came back with Reagan and Bush and is holding the neocons or the cons, the conservatives broadly, mental hostage. And they're all saying, well, yeah, whatever he gets, he must deserve it. It must be a good thing for the economy that he gets all that money. Or that they get all that money. The heads, you know, it's not usually just one CEO who's making all that money. You've got all the various vice presidents and the directors and all these, and they're all making millions, tens of millions, in some cases hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, I'm not suggesting that salaries be capped in corporate America. I don't think you could do it. Or I don't think you should do it. I don't think it's appropriate that government meddle in business activity at that level. But what government can do, and historically has done, and does on a day-to-day basis, is to use tax policy as a way of saying, this is to achieve the goals that we, the people, that we all collectively agree on, are desirable. We're going to structure our taxes in this particular way. And so if a CEO gets any kind of compensation over $1 million, and I would say, you know, why a million? Why not 500,000? But, you know, people could say, well, you know, some people actually need to have $1 million to live on. And, you know, I'll say, okay, cool. Now, see, this isn't going to prevent somebody from earning $50 million. If they own their own corporation, if it's not a publicly traded corporation, and they are the stockholders, they're the one who's going to, you know, bear the consequences. If the stockholders decide that it's important enough to have this person get all this compensation, they'll just say, hey, do it. We'll pay the taxes on it. But most companies will cap their salaries at that. Now, why is that a good thing? Why is it a good thing that the very, 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 very wealthy pay more of their income in taxes as a percentage of their income than the middle class or the working poor? The fairness theory, which is the one that most people are familiar with, simply says, you know, for a working person, 10% of their salary may represent all the money they spend on food. I mean, it may represent the difference between eating and not eating. Whereas for a rich person, 10% of their salary may represent the difference between, you know, buying a new yacht, buying a 70-foot yacht, or buying a 50-foot yacht. And as a society, there are certain thresholds that we want to make sure people meet. We want to make sure that people actually have enough food to eat. We want to make sure that people actually have good, you know, reasonable accommodations. We want to make sure that our children are raised in a society where they feel safe. Does a progressive tax system help or harm democracy? Our question for this hour. And the fairness suggestion is that, and you see this, by the way, this isn't something that's just like unique to philosophers of the 20th century or the 19th century. This is how it runs among tribal people all over the planet. This is how human beings have lived for 100,000 years. And there's a reason for that. It's because it's the one of the very best systems that has ever been invented. It's pure and simple trial and error. Historically, among tribal people all around the world, with very few exceptions, accumulating lots and lots of stuff and keeping it away from everybody else in the tribe was viewed as a sign of mental illness. Well, it still is, by the way. People who obsess on collecting wealth are said by psychiatrists these days to have obsessive compulsive disorder. You give them Prozac or one of the other SSRI drugs, and their compulsion to acquire starts to diminish. But somehow we have raised this compulsion into a religious icon. But setting aside the fairness question, does a progressive tax system help or harm democracy? Let's get to the practical question. We'll do that right after the break here. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hey, folks, it's John Madden here to tell you about the August Best Buys at Ace Hardware. Come in today and get Quality Touch semi-gloss wall paint for only $12 a gallon. It's great for kitchens, baths, even wood trim. Heck, not only will you get our lowest price of the year, but the folks at Ace can help you match over 1,400 colors. Plus, the Ace Quality brand comes with a 12-year warranty. So hurry in to your local Ace Hardware throughout the month of August. Ace, the helpful place.
Quantities limited. Available at participating stores.
The Radio Shack Glossary of Electronics. Today's term, the boomerang. It's when someone sells you the wrong accessory or a no-name thing that simply goes kaput.
Excuse me, this didn't work.
Bummer.
They didn't sell you an electronic accessory, my friend. They sold you a boomerang, because it's coming back to that store. But at Radio Shack, we give you easy answers by carrying a bigger selection of quality accessories for all major brands of electronics. So you'll come back because you want to, not because you have to. Radio Shack, you've got questions, we've got answers.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
An awfully ugly little bill is quietly squirming its way through the congressional machinery. A bill that would be devastating for small business, consumers, and our communities. It's the National Bank of Walmart's bill. Actually, that's not the official title, but that's its impact. Walmart, Citigroup, GE, and a handful of other giants have been pushing Congress to set up a new parallel system of banking that would operate outside the regulatory oversight of the Federal Reserve Board and would have the power to bully local independent banks out of business. Lobbyists for Walmart and the rest want Congress to let them buy little-known entities called industrial loan companies, then expand these small outfits into full-fledged commercial banks, opening up branches nationwide without state approval and escaping federal rules to make the banks operate in a sound manner. It's a way for the Walmarts to bypass the current prohibition against commercial firms owning banks, giving them the banking power to take control of our local economies. Walmart is the smiley-faced beast that already uses predatory pricing power to crush small businesses wherever it locates, and now it could use this new national banking clout to muscle out local banks. Then it would own the town. A local business trying to compete with Walmart, for example, would have to go to the beast for credit, even having to reveal its business plan to the giant. Naturally, Walmart will not be terribly interested in financing local competitors. Instead, using its banks to siphon our local capital out of our communities and into its own expansion elsewhere. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course Walmart and its political puppets claim that this is simply how the competitive system works. But that's like saying that you should compete with Mike Tyson in a street brawl. Unleashing Walmart on our communities is not a competition, it's a mugging. This giant already exercises brutish power, and it ought not get more.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Does a progressive tax system help or harm democracy? This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our quote for the day, by the way, is from the United States versus Nixon, the United States Supreme Court. In 1974, they said, neither separation of powers nor the need for confidentiality can sustain unqualified presidential immunity from the judicial process. Tell that to Dick Cheney, who's saying, no, you have no right to look at our records of which oil companies said what to me back before 9/11 when we were parceling up Iraq. George W. Bush, said Senator Bob Graham, is managing this economy the way his friend Ken Lay managed Enron. He's running it into the ground. We see deficits exploding as a result of the failed and cynical tax policies of this administration. Does a progressive tax system help or harm democracy? As I said just a moment ago, this is the question. And now, one of the folks in our chat room says, well, what about a flat tax? You know, everybody's going to figure out loopholes if you have a progressive tax. Well, first of all, a progressive tax can be instituted without loopholes, just like a flat tax could. You can say every person who makes $0 to $30,000 pays nothing. Everybody who makes $30,000 to $50,000 pays 15%. Everybody who makes you could just parcel it up and say this is it. No deductions, no loopholes, nothing. Sorry. Just exactly the same way, you could say everybody in the United States pays 17.5% of their income, period, no deductions. You could do it both ways. So the argument that Bill Simon and his buddies put out, and Steve Forbes, for a flat tax, saying that it'll do away with loopholes, is a straw man argument. It's got nothing to do with reality. Does anybody seriously think, for example, that even in the presence of a flat tax, that Congress would be willing or able to pass an end to the mortgage interest deduction? It would be suicide. It would be political suicide. It would be economic suicide. People would stop buying houses. We go back to people renting like they were. I mean, we have such high ownership, home ownership in the United States since the late 1940s as a direct result of the passage of that tax deduction. People just generally did not own homes back around throughout the 19th century and into the early 20th century. There was no middle class. There were the working desperate poor, the working poor, and the working little better than poor. And what the home mortgage deduction did was it allowed people to start aggregating wealth in the form of their homes in a way that had never been done before in the United States. So sometimes tax policy is actually a useful thing. And secondly, the flat tax fails in that it doesn't acknowledge the fact that we all pay multiple taxes. People who make $10,000 a year and pay zero in income taxes are still paying FICA tax, they're still paying unemployment tax, I mean, they're still paying the payroll tax. And even if you were to wipe that out and say, okay, we'll cover all that with a flat tax, they are still paying They are still paying for sales taxes. They're still paying property taxes. They're still paying a tax when they register their car. They typically, people making under $20,000 in the United States are paying about 17% of their income in taxes, even though they pay no income tax. So what a flat tax would do is would add another 17% to them. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Sean in Georgia is on the line. Sean, we've only got about a... Say that again? Oh, okay. I was going to say, Sean, we just are running out of time here on this break. Sean, hang on. We'll pick up your call right after the break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
David Thoreau said that there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root. ReclaimDemocracy.org is striking at the deepest root of today's problems, runaway corporate power. We focus on proactive structural change to restore citizen authority over corporations and return them to their legitimate role, doing business and nothing more. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Birth control pills for people can affect the fertility of fish. I'm Jill Ladwig for Earthwatch Radio. Some of the pills and pharmaceutical compounds we use are not fully broken down in our bodies. Traces of them get into wastewater and ultimately into lakes and streams. And people are wondering what effect they can have on wildlife. Oral contraceptives are one of the compounds that can get into the environment. Studies by a U.S. government laboratory show that even a trace of them can dramatically affect the fertility of fish. Irvin Schultz is a fisheries biologist and toxicologist at the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory near Seattle. Schultz studied how male rainbow trout react to synthetic estrogen. It's a common ingredient in birth control pills, and Schultz exposed some adult fish to very low levels of it in a lab experiment. He did this for 2 months and then tested their fertility. He says exposure to the estrogen, even at low levels, reduced the fertility of the male fish by half.
We were startled by the reduction in fertility, particularly at the 10 parts per trillion exposure level. Prior to doing the study, we thought that might be an exposure level that would be too low to see any effects.
Schultz says even the lowest levels of exposure had adverse effects on mature fish that were otherwise healthy.
The specifics of our study is that we used fish that were healthy and were mature and then gave them a relatively short exposure and saw effects.
Schultz says the experiment used conditions that fish might find downstream from an average-sized sewage treatment plant. He says it's important to find out how other species of fish and other forms of life are being affected by this kind of low-level exposure to drugs in the water. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
she thought I was alright. Alright in a sort of a limited way for an off night. She said, don't I know you from the cinematographer's party? I said, who am I to blow against the wind? I know what I know.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman at the IE America Radio Network. Deutsche Telekom AG has dazzled investors this summer with better-than-expected earnings, aggressive debt reduction, and a 10% rise in its share price since June 13th, says the Wall Street Journal. Sounds good, doesn't it? Well, no. One of the folks in our chat room said, let me get this exact quote, said, a flat tax would prevent Congress from raising taxes on any one group. It would make all Americans understand we are all in this together. And my question is, all in what together? And, of course, there is one group that doesn't want their taxes raised at all. And that's, you know, people who are paying a lot of taxes. But if somebody who's making $12,000 a year, and you go to them and say, you know, I mean, they're not paying any taxes right now. They're working very hard. They're not paying any income tax right now. They're paying enormous amounts of taxes. 15 to 17% of their total income they're paying in taxes. And it's just not reasonable. Anyhow, we have this situation. Oh, Sean in Georgia. I'm sorry. I forgot you were there, Sean. 1-800-TALK. Yes. Sean, thanks for calling the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Yeah, I'd like to thank you for putting all this wonderful information out there. I'm stuck in a liberal free zone or something like that. They knocked Mike Malloy off the air here in Augusta, and I can't get anything but Rush and Neil Bortz, and it's hurt.
Oh, my.
I have a question, though. I have been.
You need to call your radio stations and let them know about that, Sean.
Oh, well, indeed. I've been meaning to, but, you know, hey, never get around to it. But I have been listening to this Neil Bortz character, and he's been trumpeting this National Retail Sales Act. I'm wondering what you know about it, what you think about it. I haven't heard any arguments to the contrary for it. I'm wondering, you know, is this a good idea? Should I write my congressman about it? What's the deal there?
Well, I haven't heard Neil in years since I lived in Atlanta, so I don't know what he's... Is it a national sales tax?
Yeah, it's a National Retail Sales Tax Act. It's a House Resolution. Let me look it up here again. Yeah. They got a website right here, salestax.org.
Yeah.
House Resolution,
well, here's
something or other.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it, Sean. Here are my thoughts on it. The two arguments that extremely wealthy people and their shills will put forward, the two ways to try and change the dialogue or the discussion are, number one, we need a flat tax, or number two, we need a national sales tax. And the reality, and both of them seem to make sense. Well, yeah, everybody pays the same sales tax. Yeah, everybody pays the same flat tax. But the reality is that they both fall disproportionately hard on people who work for a living, and particularly on the working poor. They both will discourage the development of a middle class. And they both benefit disproportionately the extremely wealthy. Most people who make more than $1 million a year, actually most people who make more than a couple $100,000 a year, don't spend all of the money that they get. They get this money and they invest it. Well, if I'm making $1 million this year and I put $800,000 into treasury bonds, I'm not going to be contributing anything to the government if we derive our taxes from a national sales tax, except on the $200,000 where I go out and I buy stuff. And I earned $1 million. And so I benefited from the infrastructure of our society. I benefited from the public education of my employees or the people who I work with. I benefited from the fact that my company couldn't exist without our society and our government and our economic system, which we're all paying for with our taxes. I benefited in all those ways, but I'm only paying 20% benefit on it compared to you, who might be paying 100%.
Right. I see where it would fall disproportionately. The thing, their argument is that these rich people, well, they're going to buy more houses and cars and boats and whatnot, and therefore, they're, you know, if they're buying like a lot more big ticket items, they're going to be paying a lot more tax than somebody. They're trying to say it's a progressive tax in that sense, since they're going to be spending more of their money on luxury items and whatnot. And the poor people are going to be spending less of their money on that. They're going to be buying food and clothing and whatnot.
Yeah, but the reality is these are the kind of arguments that the cons put out there to try and pull the wool over your eyes. Okay. Yes, rich people, if they have more money, might buy more luxury items. They might go to a $3,000 bottle of wine rather than a $2,000 per bottle of wine. But the reality is that the whole thing of investment gets sucked right out of that.
Right.
See, that's what most people who make over $1 million a year do with most of their money is they invest it.
Right.
You can't. It's a big job trying to spend $1 million a year.
Oh yeah. Well, I wish I could try. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, but the point is that this is just a scam. This is just a scam. This is the kind of stuff. This is class warfare in disguise that these guys are putting out. Sean, thanks for calling and sharing that with us. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. 1-800-825-5937. And Matt in Louisiana is on the line. Matt, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Is this Doug Steffen or Mike Malloy?
This is Tom Hartman.
Oh, hi, Tom Hartman. How are you doing? Sound good. Sound good this morning.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm in a liberal free zone also. I'm in Monroe, Louisiana.
Well, and, you need to call your local radio station, too. You need to call your local radio stations and say, get this program on if you're having to listen on the web or something.
Yeah, well I didn't know that. I listen to a local radio, rock and roll radio station here.
Uh-huh.
And how would I listen to it on the radio?
Yeah, well, what you find is that in any market where there's more than one station carrying talk radio, then usually one of them has, you know, Limbaugh, for example, he's the strongest on the conservative side, and then they'll have somebody going against him, like Prager or O'Reilly, and they're really splitting up the conservative pie. And a lot of these stations, these second stations, are saying, hey, why should we fight for that half of the pie? We'll take the whole liberal pie or the whole, you know, from the middle to the left pie. And it makes a lot of sense. And sometimes you find music stations that aren't making as much money as they'd like to. Talk radio is profitable, and so they'll pick up the show. But anyhow, we digress. Matt, what did you call about?
Oh, well I don't know. I guess you were talking about taxes, the flat tax and stuff like that. And I had the thought for quite a while that they do have interest. I mean, how long do they – this is my weakest area. I'm not very good at mathematics. But when they have to hold their money, everybody pays taxes – no matter what your income is, but your taxes, you get them back at the end of the year if you're poor. Correct?
Then it's not a flat tax.
Oh, right. It's not a flat tax, but there's interest on that. You know, I don't think people think about that. You know, what would the interest be? Because you always get a small, they're talking about the rich getting taxed all the time, but you have the person who makes, like you said, $12,000 a year, and they're putting all this money out in federal and state taxes, which they get back at the end of the year.
Right.
And so it's not, and the rich, I mean, and one thing I wanted to ask you is, if you had a flat tax, do you think that that would keep us from sliding down the slope of trying to bail these big corporations out?
No. It's the reality is that we have had an absolute collapse in the United States. Corporations were contributing something on the order. I had my book. I don't have it.
That's okay.
Equal protection. Corporations were contributing something on the order of 30-35% to the total tax burden in the United States in the 1950s, and they're down to around 17 or 18% right now.
Oh my!
I'll have the exact numbers for you in just a second. And that's just a reflection of their power. It's just pure and simple. Those with the power get to make the rules,
right.
And by and large. And I'm suggesting that the people should have the power. That we need to go back to a system where we, the people, are taking the power with regard to interest. If the government takes some of our money and holds on to it, this is one of the other scams that I've heard with regard to the flat tax folks is,
right.
Oh, well, we'll take this tax and we'll generate interest on this tax and then we'll give you your money back and we'll run the government on the interest. The reality is that our government right now doesn't have the ability to hold money and generate interest because our government is in debt.
That's like you're going to the bank and saying... You're for all this physical conservatism that the Democrats moved us towards in the 80s.
I'm not sure that this is something that you could say the Democrats or the Republicans own. Fiscal conservatism
as
is really
towards the right, like Clinton did in the 80s.
Fiscally, yeah.
Okay,
I'm in favor of that. Well, yes and no. I am not in favor of moving us toward the right like Clinton did in the 80s, whatever that means. I am in favor of our government here and not having huge debts. And here's why. About a third of the total budget of the United States right now is being paid, as I recall, I have to get the exact number for you, but it's a big chunk many cents on every dollar that you pay in taxes is going to pay the interest on our national debt.
Right.
That's nuts. Why should we spend all this money on interest when there are other more important things to do? It's just, I mean, this isn't right or left. It's not conservative or liberal. This is just common sense.
Well, let me tell you, when, and I'll get off here because that's the only issue. That's all I wanted to say about the flat tax is that when we have liberals, people claiming to be liberals, making laws in big cities where homeless people aren't allowed to sleep on the street and aren't allowed to solicit money from the public, I think we've got a problem. And you're
what?
Exactly right. We better turn it into something tangible that's not just right and left, or something relevant that's not just right and left, because the left, people that are on the left sometimes are doing some nutty things. They're claiming things that the left it has no part of.
Yeah, and the right has done a really good job of finding those occasional nuts and hanging them out and saying, this is what the liberals are all about. But I agree with you, Matt, and that's why I call this program Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle rather than from the left.
You got a lot of common sense on this program. And
thank you.
That's just what I wanted to talk about.
Okay, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Does a progressive tax system help or harm democracy? Greg in New Mexico, your thoughts?
Hi, Tom. Adding to problem with interest on the debt is the people who are buying those treasury notes are getting them tax-free anyway. So if you're rich, you get a tax break by buying part of the debt. But going back to the national sales tax, whereas people say it falls disproportionately on the poor, if you make several exemptions for your primary residence, for food that is cooked in the home, for education, and for medical, provided we don't get a national health plan, then people who are in lower income groups wouldn't pay much in tax. By the time you pay off your rent and buy your groceries, there's not a lot left anyway. Let the people who have a lot of discretionary income pay for it.
But then you don't have a flat tax anymore. Greg, what you're describing is a progressive tax.
Right. And then if
so it's not a flat tax.
No, a sales tax, national sales tax.
Well, okay, you know, whatever kind of tax you have, I mean, whether it's so you're suggesting something that's sort of like the value added tax thing.
Exactly.
And
if corporations wish to be treated as individuals, then they can pay the same tax rate as individuals.
Yeah, here's the other benefit to the wealthy is that they can afford to hire people to do their tax forms for them.
Right.
So they can take all these kinds of deductions.
And write the tax codes for them.
Right, and the average person can't do that. I just don't buy it that if we went to a national sales tax that all the poor people in America would fill out forms at the end of every year to document how much they had spent and wait until they got their money back. People are living hand to mouth.
Exactly.
We shouldn't be taking their money in the first place.
No, they don't have enough to pay in taxes and still contribute.
And see that's the point, Greg, is that there's this stabilizer. Here's the big concept. You know, when a ship is going through the sea, the keel of the ship, the bottom of the ship, you know, goes down deep. And they used to, back in the old days when they ran these wooden ships back and forth between the United States, between North America and Europe, they would fill the bottom of the ships with stones, sometimes with the cannonballs, with lead. It was called ballast, right? And what it did was it stabilized the ship. So if the wind came along, it didn't flip the ship over into the water. And the stabilizer, the ballast for the economy of the United States over the last 100 years or so has clearly been the existence of the middle class. When you look at it, you see that from the mid to late 1930s up until the 1980s, and right up until now, I mean, the middle class has been shrinking ever since Ronald Reagan took office, but it's still here. I mean, there's still a middle class in the United States, and the middle class is the stabilizer. And the more you have who are desperately poor, and the more you have who are fabulously rich, and the smaller that middle class gets, the more unstable the society gets, the more dangerous, the more at risk you are, the more, you know, it's a serious problem. We had this thing just before the Great Depression where there was this huge shift that has, you know, very similar to the huge shift that's happening right now in terms of income. I'm looking for the numbers here. I don't have it right off the top of my head, and I'll have to get it for you some other time. Oh, here it is. The 1926 tax cut reduced income taxes for millionaires from 60% to 20% in just 3 years. This was the same, and then 3 years earlier, the minimum wage had been repealed by the United States Supreme Court. So the poor got poorer, the rich got richer. In millionaires' income, sales tax or income tax went from 60% down to 20%. The America's top 1% of families reaped a 75% increase in after-tax income during the 1920s. And from 1920 to 1929, corporate profits rose 62% and dividends rose 65%. We took the ballast out, and what happened? We got the Great Depression. And it's happening again. We're seeing this all over again. Jim, thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling in. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Pablo in Santa Fe is on the line. Pablo, we got about a minute here. What's up? Oh, maybe we lost Pablo, eh?
A brief little observation about, you know, the term that the cons always use about the free market?
Yes.
Taking that to in the extreme logical conclusion, basically, that's what slavery was.
Sure.
As far as, you know, the cheapest labor possible. And the next step up from that, I guess, would be, what, feudalism or something in that realm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But
and that's what they want to return to. This article I started to read to you about Deutsche Telekom in the Wall Street Journal, it says, it's a problem that won't go away. Deutsche Telekom's 250,000 employees account for 30% of the company's total costs, but 70% of these workers are in Germany, where more than a quarter of them are employed under generous civil servant contracts. In other words, you can't easily fire these people. And they're saying this is a cost, and this is a problem. It's causing the company to only make about a 10% return every year, not the huge returns that they could make if they could do, you know, wholesale firing and move their labor force to India. Pablo, thanks for the call. Thanks for the comment. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
One of the reasons people give for not buying LoJack is where they live. But that has little to do with whether your car will be stolen. It's where you drive. Do you drive to work? To a mall? To the city? That's why you need LoJack. Nationally, stolen vehicles that have LoJack are recovered over 90% of the time. And LoJack guarantees they'll recover your vehicle within 24 hours after you report it stolen to the police, or LoJack will reimburse you the cost of your LoJack system. See your car dealer or LoJack.com.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Doolittle, to talk to the animals. You don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him? Okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Okay,
if they flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Over the mountain, down in the valley, lives a former talk show host. Everybody knows his name. He said there's no doubt about it. It was a myth, the fingerprints. I've seen them all, and man, they're all the same.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. And 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Ruth is on the line from Orlando. Ruth, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, how you doing?
I am great. How are you?
I'm okay. As well as I can be in our current climate. That's all I can say about that. You know, as far as the flat tax or the taxes are concerned, I'm listening to what you're saying and I'm agreeing with you. But unless we stop the flow of massive amounts of revenue out of this country in the tax shelters and tax havens that the corporations have, I don't think that an income tax revision per se is going to be enough to turn this around. I think back in the 50s, I think we had something like 40% of the revenues that corporations made were reinvested in local communities, and now it's less than 10%. That was what sustained our infrastructure to a large extent, was reinvestment of monies from corporations within the local communities.
Absolutely. And not only that, George Bush just a few days ago said he wouldn't rule out eliminating the corporate income tax altogether.
I absolutely believe that. Do you know
all
what
those tax shelters are gone.
There's a CNN article, too, today on, you know, you were mentioning that these civil workers weren't going to be getting their raise, or they're
right.
only going to get 2%. Halliburton and Bechtel just got raises in Iraq. Bechtel
yes.
is going to get an additional $350 million, and
yeah.
They can't even estimate what Halliburton's going to get.
Yes, of course. They can't estimate
it's, just, it's just absolutely bizarre. But here's I heard a joke last night. I was at a Dean Steering Committee meeting, and I heard a joke. Arnold Schwarzenegger would make a good California governor because he can translate the Patriot Act, the original German.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrible, Ruth.
I know. Isn't it awful?
Ich glaube, das ist sehr interessant.
Arbeit macht das Leben süß.
That's
all I have to say about that.
Ich bin einverstanden. Thank you, Ruth. We're going to have to stop this.
I think we should, because anybody tuning in right away is going to be kind of, you know, freaked.
Yeah.
Bye.
It's the Nazi hour. Okay, Ruth, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. You're with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well.
listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. More of the nation's top lawmakers continue pushing for better international cooperation to rebuild Iraq, as well as more honesty from the White House. Delaware Democratic Senator Joe Biden is one of them, and he told Good Morning America earlier, President Bush needs to be more candid about the costs, casualties, and the duration of America's post-invasion commitment in Iraq.
And the president better level with us, better tell the American people so we can support him. I will support it. If they don't level, they will not get the support we need, and we need to win the peace in Iraq.
The United States and Great Britain are still exploring a possible UN resolution to encourage other nations to send troops, security trainers, and money for the reconstruction of Iraq. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan suggested last week the Security Council okay a new U.S.-led multinational force for Iraqi peacekeeping, but member France insists the U.S. hand over management of Iraqi security to a UN-led force. Six-way talks on North Korea's nuclear ambitions are in their second day today, and the United States has again ruled out holding any bilateral talks with Pyongyang to discuss the issue. More on the story from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
Host nation China is calling for restraint, warning hardline positions will only deepen the dispute and threaten peace in the region. But hopes of success are limited, as North Korea says the discussions will fail unless the United States is ready to offer a non-aggression pact. Meanwhile, Washington is insisting the communist state scraps its weapons program in a verifiable and irreversible manner. Officials from South Korea, Japan, and Russia are also taking part in the talks. The nuclear standoff began when North Korea restarted a mothballed nuclear power station, threw out inspectors from the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency, and pulled out of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Suzanne Chislett reporting.
And first-time unemployment claims are up. The Labor Department says for the week ending August 23rd, jobless claims rose by 3,000 to about 394,000.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... You're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The alleged shooter in yesterday's killing spree that left six people dead, including the gunman in a Chicago auto parts warehouse, already had a lengthy criminal record. Salvador Tapia, who was shot and killed by police at the scene, has been described as a disgruntled former employee with a criminal history that included drug-related and violent crimes. The shooting is being called all the more tragic today because three of the victims were from the same family. One of the company's owners, his brother, and his nephew were all killed in that shooting spree. Another owner of the company escaped the rampage because he'd been late to work because he was stuck in traffic.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Powell, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer has got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO. 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
A joint U.S. and Canadian task force met for the first time yesterday to map out its investigation into this month's blackout that affected a lot of the northeast U.S. and southeastern Canada. More from reporter Steve Sandberg.
34,000 miles of transmission lines, hundreds of generating units, and they all went out across the northeast and Canada in 9 seconds. Now a joint U.S. and Canadian task force is sifting through the data with three goals in mind. According to U.S. Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham.
One, what happened? Two, why it happened and cascaded? And third, what are the kinds of immediate recommendations that need to be put into effect in order to prevent this type of outage from happening again?
Officials say it'll take weeks before they have any concrete answers. Steve Sandberg in Princeton, New Jersey.
And it looks like California was just the beginning. The idea of recalling the governor is spread to Nevada. Opponents of Republican Kenny Guinn have filed paperwork now to begin the process of officially booting him from office. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Yesterday, in Brakes 101, master cylinders, calipers, and pads were demystified. You learned they are a lot like hearts, muscles, and skin, all designed to stop cars and save lives. When I come back, it's Brakes 102. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. Every summer, callers on the Car Clinic Network ask what's causing that odor when I turn on my air conditioner. And the answer? Bacterial growth in the AC system. The good news is there's an ingenious process from BG Products that cleans and disinfects your entire ventilation system without having to dismantle it. You'll breathe easier with a BG ventilation service, and your car will smell like new. To find a shop that performs this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Welcome to Brakes 102 at Car Clinic College. Today's lesson, analog braking systems, or ABS. Ever press the brake and nothing? You just pumped and hoped for the best? Hope no more. The best is here. Computer-controlled ABS. This system monitors the speed of individual wheels and applies precise braking power to each. And if any brake starts to lock or slows at a different rate than the others, that specific brake is automatically pumped or pulsed to prevent lockup. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to our program. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, also streaming from outer space on the Sirius radio satellite system, or satellite radio system, and broadcasting live all around the world on the internet on radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. And you can find it all at tomhartman.com. On Thursday afternoons at 2 o'clock, we always try to push the boundaries of what we know, get into an area of something that we didn't know that we didn't know. You didn't know, you didn't know, you didn't know. And with our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Is it wrong? Is it? Could it be? Is there a dark side to Mount Rushmore? Mount Rushmore, in front of which George Bush got himself carefully choreographically photographed to provide one of those marvelous campaign photos for posterity so everybody would think that his face just deserves to be there with Lincoln and Roosevelt and whatnot. Mount Rushmore. Jesse Larner is a journalist and a graduate of Columbia University's School of International and Public Affairs. He's lived and worked in Poland, Taiwan, and South Dakota, and is presently doing research for a book on American missionaries and their impact on U.S. foreign policy. Jesse, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad you could be here. Tell me, what is the dark side of Mount Rushmore?
Well, there's a whole history to Mount Rushmore and the land on which it stands that most people aren't aware of. When people think of Mount Rushmore, we're told that it's the shrine of democracy, that it honors these four presidents, although that's not exactly the official meaning of the monument. But we're not told about how that land came to be part of the United States. We're not told about the broken Indian treaties and a particularly nasty chapter of the Indian Wars that brought that land into the United States. And we're not told about the white supremacist leadings and the Ku Klux Klan affiliation of the sculptor of Mount Rushmore, Gutzon Borglum. And, of course, there's good reasons that we're not told about these things, because, you know, modern Americans would feel quite uncomfortable with these facts about Mount Rushmore.
Well, Jesse, isn't it? Couldn't you just say that about any place in America? I mean, there's no part of North America where European ancestry or African ancestry or Hispanic ancestry people are living that wasn't taken from Native Americans.
Well, I suppose you could say that, but I mean, it's a fact of life that, you know, this part of the world has been settled and resettled many times, you know.
Yeah, but the Mount Rushmore area appears to be particularly brutal, perhaps, with General George Custer starting out in 1874.
Mount Rushmore conveys a certain message. I think that the ultimate meaning of monuments is to assert an official interpretation, to literally set it in stone, to say this is how it is, this is what America means, and this is the kind of America that everybody must belong to. This is the way to be an American. And I think that if there are other messages that Mount Rushmore is emitting that people aren't aware of, I think those messages are important, too, and I think that people should know some of the history of Mount Rushmore. I don't think that it's impossible to see Mount Rushmore in the terms in which it claims to be seen. You know, I think that if you want to see it as an evocation of everything that's great about this country, you're perfectly entitled to do so. But I think that people should be aware of some of the other historical facts behind the monument, and the other, in fact, the beliefs of the people who made it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. There are folks out there who go on these rants about, there's some folks who only want to find what's wrong with America. And in my mind, only wanting to look at one view of something is anti-patriotic. It's there's no nobility associated with it at all. I would rather be able to look at Mount Rushmore and think, yes, these four men did extraordinary things, and we have an extraordinary nation here, and we are a beacon for the world in many regards, and there is a dark side to our history too. And if we don't remember that, then we may make mistakes in the future that could be very, very destructive. We must know both sides of it. And it has nothing to do with trying to tear down the country or trying to build up the country or being patriotic or not being patriotic. It has to do with understanding the truth and the history.
I think you're quite right. I think that true patriotism involves a subtle knowledge of history. I certainly don't want to take anything away from the accomplishments of these four great presidents. I think it's also important to be aware of that while they did great things, they also all were involved in the project of wiping out American Indians, physically or culturally. I think that human history and human relations actually are quite complex. It's like the whole debate about how we should study Columbus nowadays. One side insists that he was a brutal colonist and a slaver. Another side insists that he was a great explorer. In fact,
he was both.
And I think if we want to understand Columbus, we have to acknowledge that.
Yeah, so let's get into the history of Mount Rushmore. In 1874, George Custer discovered gold in the Black Hills. In 1877, 3 years later, we had three nations, the Lakota, Nakota, and Dakota, who also known collectively as the Great Sioux Nation. Three linguistic and geographic groups, the Lakota from the Teton and West Dakota, the Nakota from the Yankton and Central Dakota, and the Dakota from the Santee and Eastern Dakota. And about 10% of the Lakota group of males, this is one of these three groups, so 10% of one-third of them signed a treaty in 1877 to give up the Black Hills. Is that right?
Right. It was not officially called a treaty because by that time Congress had given up its the custom of treating with Indian nations as actual separate independent nations. It was called an agreement. Let's go back a little before that to 1868, when there was a treaty that ceded in perpetuity to the Lakota, the Cheyenne, and the Arapaho. A great deal of land. It was one of the few Indian treaties ever negotiated from a position of Indian strength, and at that time it was indeed a treaty in 1868. Granted to the Lakota all of South Dakota west of the Missouri and big chunks of Wyoming, Montana, Colorado, and Nebraska, and other parts known as unceded hunting territory. This included
this
the Black
the
Hills.
Go ahead.
This included the Black Hills, that was the sort of the spiritual and political heart of the Lakota Nation, which they in turn had taken from the Crow about 100 years before that, from the Crow and the Cheyenne. And as I said, this was one of the few treaties negotiated from an Indian position of strength. The government really didn't have the will or the ability to hold on to that section of the West at that time, although they soon were planning to have that ability with the introduction of railroads into the West. Now, Custer did come through in 1874, discovered gold. The gold had been rumored to be there for a long time. It was sort of, you know, it was sort of common knowledge that the gold had been there. There had been information about that leaking out for a long time, though the Indians did try to keep this a secret because they knew what the consequences of widespread knowledge of this gold would be. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the country was going through a recession. The Panic of 1873 was one of the worst economic times this country had known until the Great Depression of the 1930s. It was very hard politically for the government to live up to its obligations to keep this treaty area closed to white settlers. Yeah. The government was caught between its treaty obligations and its constituency. And, of course, since Indians were non-American citizens and didn't vote and didn't fit into the political process, it wasn't really a tough call for the government at that time.
We're speaking, let me just interrupt you for a minute. We're speaking with Jesse Larner, the author of Mount Rushmore, An Icon Reconsidered. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's 15 minutes after the hour. Jesse, is there a website for your book or for this information?
Yes, there is. It's www.rushmore.cc. Not .com, .cc.
.cc, is that Czechoslovakia?
You know, I don't know exactly what it means, but with that extension, the word Rushmore was available for registration.
Huh, cool. Interesting. I've got one of those .to domains, and those are coming out of Togo.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. Anyhow, okay, so we've got the situation here. What is the dark side of Mount Rushmore? We've got about 3 or 4 minutes here, Jesse, to wrap this up. Custer went in. He discovered the gold. The gold rush begins.
Yeah, he found gold. The gold rush began. The government was faced with either, you know, kicking these illegal miners out of the Black Hills or protecting them. This led to various military encounters. The most famous, of course, was Custer's battle on the Little Bighorn in June of 1876. And this was an ironic victory for the Lakota and Arapaho and Cheyenne. Of course, Custer was wiped out, but then, of course, the full weight of the United States government fell on the Indians, and they basically were forced to negotiate this agreement at gunpoint in 1877 that took the Black Hills from them. Later, the remaining parts of the reservation were chopped up into smaller and smaller allotments. This process continued into the 20th century of chopping up Indian land.
Yeah, and it continues to this day. Let's talk about Gutzon Borglum, who was this guy is quite a character. He was the mad genius behind this thing, Mount Rushmore. Is that right?
Yes, he was a complicated, very energetic, prolific, romantic figure, very passionate. He was a bit of a crackpot. He had these extremely romanticized ideas about America's political mission in the world. He was also a lifelong white supremacist, although, again, he was a complicated character. He railed against Jews constantly, although he was one of the first public figures in America to see what Hitler was up to and to denounce it, even at a time when other public figures like Lindbergh were supporting Hitler. He believed in manifest destiny, and yet he was a passionate proponent of Indian rights in the West. Not, of course, to the point of wanting to give back the Black Hills, which was not even an issue until much later. But I think that as long as other cultures and races didn't stake too much of a claim against, you know, mainstream European civilization, he was certainly willing to see injustices that were done against them. But he was also a high-ranking member of the Ku Klux Klan, He became involved with the Klan when he was working at Stone Mountain in Georgia, which was a building a monument to the Confederacy, a project which came to a rather difficult end for him because this became a Klan project, and there were all kinds of divisions within the Klan. Borglum ended up on the wrong side of a Klan dispute and was fired from the project. And at that point, you know, never went back to the Klan. He was never openly a Klan member. This would not have been very politically astute at that time. But in fact, he was an officer of the Klan who was appointed to the National Klansilium in 1923 to develop a national program for the Klan.
Remarkable. We're talking with Jesse Larner. Jesse, we've only got about 20 seconds here left. Borglum made Washington's nose a foot longer than scale to add 100,000 years to the lifetime of his work?
Yes, he did. He believed in the permanency of his message and the unalterable nature of it. And I point out in my book that that's rather ironic, that he wanted his monument to last a million years, if possible, and yet only 60 years after it was after work stopped on it. We already have a great deal of difficulty taking his message at face value, so to speak.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of other things that creep in.
Yep. Jesse Larner, author of Mount Rushmore and Icon Reconsidered. Thank you, Jesse, for being with us on the program today. I appreciate your joining us for our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Nice drive, Jim.
Ah, thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Hear that Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I want to see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
on the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Brain Shrub in our chat room. But you can get to by going to liberaltalkradio.com and clicking on the chat link, chat room links. Says, I don't think it's so much as a lie. I just think we are taught the wrong history. We're taught the history of the ruling class. In high school, I learned almost nothing of the workers' movement. I didn't know of the incredible things they did until I picked up a Utah Phillips CD. Ever since then, I love to read about the workers' movement. And spot on. Absolutely right. And this is history. Abraham Lincoln's famous saying, not Abraham Lincoln, excuse me, Adolf Hitler's famous saying about history is written by the victors. And the victors tend to be those who eventually become the ruling class. Here we have, speaking of the victors, in today's New York Times, it happened yesterday, folks. It happened yesterday. Nobody thought he'd do it. Nobody thought he would be willing to sacrifice the lives of thousands of people. Literally, sacrifice the lives of thousands of people. That's funny. I printed that out this morning. I thought I had it with me. I'm going to have to find this during the break. I'm going to get this for you. This incredible quote from our senator here, Jim Jeffords, the only Republican in the last few decades that I've actually voted for. About what George W. Bush did yesterday. It's just an outrage. And when I read you Jeffords' words after the next break, you're going to be absolutely astounded. In fact, maybe that's it right there. Yes, indeed. Eureka. And I quote, he said, I happened to be in the Senate at that time, and I was on the committee that passed out his bill. He's talking about the Clean Air Act. Why George Bush wants to weaken it the way he is doing and cause thousands of lives to be lost over the next few years just bewilders me. I don't understand what he is trying to do. And then a little later on in the interview, he said, now, what they're trying to do is to allow these power plants to reduce their costs by not having to reduce the amount of pollution that comes out of those smokestacks. To me, knowing the facts as I do, as the committee will, if we let him get away with that, it's just criminal in my mind. United States Senator James Jeffords, I'll bet you didn't hear those quotes on faux news. And most likely not on CBS, NBC, or ABC. A United States Senator calling the President of the United States a criminal and saying what he's trying to do is bewilders me. Well, what is it that he was trying to do? He did it yesterday, George W. Bush. He did it. The Bush administration, the New York Times today, the Bush administration relaxed its clean air rules today to allow thousands of industrial plants to make upgrades without installing industrial pollution controls. Utilities had sought the new rule. This is a rule, and I quote, a rule that will allow thousands of power plants, refineries, pulp and paper mills, chemical plants, and other industrial facilities. You got this? This whole, 17,000 of them, a conservative estimate, no pun intended, to increase pollutants without having to install new anti-pollution devices. The industry has been lobbying for this thing for years. And well, actually, for the last 2 years, they've been the rule for which industries have lobbied the administration for 2 years could save them billions of dollars. Now, how many millions do you think this industry is giving to the Republican Party in order to make billions in profits? Attorney General Thomas F. Riley of Massachusetts says, quote, the Bush administration is giving the green light to major industrial power plant operators to spew millions of tons more in air pollution without being held accountable. You're listening to Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where we still hold we the people in honor rather than they the transnational corporation. Stay tuned.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton. Nearly 4 weeks after their old contracts expired, two unions representing workers at telephone giant Verizon appear to be nearing a deal. But for now, union negotiators with the Communications Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers are content to remain in negotiations. Verizon has hired hundreds of strikebreakers in case of a walkout and has been keeping them furloughed at great expense in hotel rooms. No details of the talks have yet emerged, though negotiations are rumored to have stalled over the issue of union membership for employees of Verizon's sister company, Verizon Wireless.
At least two dozen people were injured in violent clashes with police in the Honduran capital of Tegucigalpa yesterday after the government announced plans to freeze public sector wages and weaken labor laws in order to secure a $1 billion loan from the International Monetary Fund. That spurred more than 12,000 people to take to the streets. Lawmakers have already opened up parts of the country's waterworks to private investment at the behest of the IMF. The protesters blocked all roads leading into the capital and barricaded major intersections for most of the day. President Ricardo Maduro says he will not back down from the IMF compromises because Honduras really needs the money.
A disgruntled worker in a South Chicago auto parts warehouse went on a rampage yesterday, killing six of his co-workers and himself. Salvador Tapia was reportedly about to lose his job when he returned to work with an assault rifle, spraying fellow employees with a hail of bullets. It's not clear whether Tapia was brought down by police or turned the gun on himself. The incident comes only 11 weeks after a Lockheed Martin employee in Meridian, Mississippi, took the lives of eight co-workers in a similar incident. It's the second such workplace shooting in Chicago in only 2.5 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'll take you there. Oh, I'll take you there. Oh, oh. Percy.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. As the anniversary, the Detroit Free Press, Cecil Angel, Detroit Free Press staff writer writes, as the anniversary of the September 11 terrorist attacks approaches and the Labor Day holiday nears, Michigan's borders have 27 fewer customs inspectors. Why are they laying off customs inspectors at the borders of our nation? Well, says Kevin Weeks, Director of Field Operations for the U.S. Bureau of Customs and Border Protection in Detroit, their funding has run out. We are cutting back on border inspectors to pay for tax cuts for the rich, my friends. Today's Wall Street Journal, U.S. to boost Bechtel's funding to rebuild Iraqi electricity grid. Now, think about this for a minute. The American electricity grid just failed. And they're going to say, and everybody's saying it's going to take millions, maybe hundreds of millions, maybe even $1 billion to really bring the U.S. energy grid, the electric grid, up to the point where it's safe and reliable. And, you know, there's no way anybody's going to appropriate that kind of money. It's a big hot potato in Congress. By the way, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, if you'd like to drop in, have a say during this last half hour of our program. So it's going to cost a couple hundred million, maybe $1 billion, to make our power grid better. I would encourage the companies to dig into their profits and pay for it, as we used to do back when it was regulated, and we simply said, you've got to pay for it, sorry. And they said, okay, well, we'll... You know. But now here's the ultimate irony. In Iraq, they have a problem with the electric grid. And from today's Wall Street Journal, U.S. officials in Baghdad have decided to boost Bechtel Group Inc.'s post-war reconstruction contract by $350 million, or more than 50%. The new Bechtel money, which could be turned over within days, $350 million for Bechtel. And the Northeast Power Grid is still going, we think we're going to work. Is part of at least $1 billion, $1,000 million the U.S. hopes to pour into Iraqi power generation alone just in the next year. U.S. officials and Bechtel assessment teams now estimate Iraqi reconstruction will cost at least $16 billion, and likely much more. End quote. In fact, L. Paul Bremer, the top U.S. official in Iraq, according again to the Wall Street Journal here, U.S. to boost Bechtel's funding to rebuild Iraqi electricity grid. L. Paul Bremer, the U.S. top U.S. official in Iraq, has said that the costs of rebuilding Iraq and revitalizing its economy could top $100 billion. $100 billion. After business rivals and some legislators criticized the limited competition involved in the award where Bechtel got a $680 million contract to rebuild the airports, water, power, schools, roads, and government buildings. Andrew Natsios, the head of the U.S. Agency for International Development, promised that no additional taxpayer money would go into the Bechtel contract beyond the $680 million ceiling. However, you know, Bechtel is a huge contributor to the Republican Party. Some say that Bechtel was one of the major forces in putting Ronald Reagan into office way back when. In fact, that's why the former president and vice president of Bechtel, George Shultz and Caspar Weinberger, were brought into Reagan's administration. And as the Wall Street Journal says, however, U.S. officials recently decided that Bechtel requires the additional $350 million to, quote, maintain momentum in high-priority infrastructure projects. End quote. Bechtel's estimate, $6 billion. $6.045 billion to rebuild the power system in Iraq. These are Bechtel's estimates. They got this little graph on the front page. Water, waste, and irrigation, $6.5 billion. Power, $6.045 billion. Airports, $1.7 billion. Buildings, $900 billion. Ports, $325 billion. Surface transportation, $310 billion. 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jeff's on the line in Denver. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's ironic you're talking about our problems with our power system and the rebuilding Iraq, because London is having a power failure right now.
You're kidding.
No.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, it says passengers trapped are in the underground. It's a national grid failure. A lot of South London is without power. Happened at 6:15 London time.
Which would have been 1:15 our time.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. You know, and England and the United States are the only two nations among all the Western democracies that have radically deregulated, or in the case of England, actually privatized much of their power infrastructure. You know, Canada hasn't done this. Germany hasn't done this. Denmark won't do it. Sweden would never think of it. Norway would think we're nuts. France is looking at us like we're crazy. We do it and England does it, and it is incredible. Are they still down, Jeff?
It doesn't say right now. It said 60% of the subway system has been halted by the outage, including the majority of services in central London. But it is. But they keep saying there has been a national grid failure.
Incredible.
So, and
Tony Blair is going to take a little heat for this, I would suspect.
Oh, and it's also ironic that, I mean, we supposedly know what happened in our back here last week, it's ironic that these are the two nations that have had the failures, and these are the two that are dealing with Iraq. And it does bring up the question of terrorism again. Of sabotage, I should say.
Or karma.
Yeah, karma, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. One thing, just since we're talking about energy, yesterday somebody was talking, you were talking about energy and buildings, and there's certain principles that I try to go by on everything, and it's dealing with energy. I've often questioned why, in the daytime, when the sun is so bright, do we have buildings that we need to turn lights on?
Yeah.
It's one of the stupidest things I can think of.
Yeah, you know, in Europe, in most of the European countries now, there are huge tax advantages associated with building buildings that are energy efficient and that don't use as much light, for example, you know, lighting and things like that. And the incentives go all the way from the level of the architect to the people who rent space in the buildings. I mean, yeah. There's just levels of incentive on top of a level of incentive, because they all realize that oil is a limited commodity, number one, and number two, the more we burn of it, the more we endanger the life of everything on Earth, including us, because of global warming.
Yeah, and I see with a building, if you're within 15 feet of the outdoors, there is no reason whatsoever to have a light on in the daytime. The building should be designed to take advantage of natural light.
Yeah,
and we fight the natural light rather than work with it.
Yeah, see, the problem is that back in the 19th century, in the 18th century, when so many of our buildings were being built, and when our kind of rules of architecture were being more, you know, fine-tuned and well-defined, energy was cheap. Coal was all over the place. You know, oil was being pumped in the last part of the 19th century, early 20th century. And so the imperative, if anything, when building, was to insulate, to keep heat in. And, you know, in some regards, so you didn't have to burn so much, and also to minimize hot spots and cool spots in rooms. And the windows were kind of, well, we got to get some light in, but it's kind of a necessary evil because, they, you know, you'd lose heat. And so it was just a whole different philosophy. And we still haven't made that shift here.
To me, astounding when you look at how much of our society that we consider to be everyday things, such as the design of our educational system, lawns, you know, the way we have our yards and so forth. We're actually just a little bit over 100 years old. These were not things that have come down through history. Our society is rather new, and we made some rather bizarre choices based on the late 1800s.
Oh, and lawns are particularly weird. You know, lawns are attempts to imitate the British nobility, where back in the old days in Europe, if you had land, you grew food on it, because, you know, food was an important commodity, and so conspicuous consumption, extraordinary wealth, meant that you could grow something on your land that didn't actually produce food, which was lawns, and you know, everybody wanted to imitate the wealthy of the British society. When we lived in Germany in 1986 and 1987, the most of the families in our community, in the town we lived in Stadtsteinach, the little town up in the Frankenwald. Most of the families had big gardens in their front yards. They might have, you know, a little strip of lawn, like a foot and a half of grass around the edge, usually not even that, and they would have these big gardens in their front yard. We moved back to Atlanta and discovered that if we were to try and put a garden in the front yard of our house, of our home in Atlanta, we'd get busted. It was against the law.
And most of this came from one author from, I don't remember his name, but he wrote a book on how to have a lawn and so forth. It really changed culture dramatically. And I wish I could remember the name of the book and the author, but it's one, either an American or a British author.
Well, if you figure it out, Jeff, drop into our chat room at tomhartman.com and post a message for us. Thanks for the call.
Take care.
Thanks for calling in. Thanks. I appreciate it. Oh, my goodness. The ex-Park Service. Here, this guy, George W. Bush, has, it's so easy to say things. Oh, yes, let's leave no child behind, but we'll cut funding. Oh, yes, let's give billions for AIDS in Africa. But somehow the funding never came once he got back from Africa. Now here we have the Park Service. This from the Washington Post this Monday. The Bush administration has failed to live up to its promises to protect America's national parks, says a group of former National Park Service employees from across the country. 123 former employees contend that the administration has sacrificed preservation of Let me redo this here. 123 former employees contend that the administration has sacrificed preservation for profit in its policies on park maintenance, air pollution enforcement, road development, and snowmobile use on federal lands, and they have encouraged the movement of Park Service jobs to the private sector. Well, that's no surprise. This is the most union-hostile administration we've seen since the last radical right-wing conservative administration of Ronald Reagan, who busted up the air traffic controllers. The cheap labor conservatives just want to have it this one particular way. This is it. The variable that you control is the cost of labor. Keep people terrified, keep them poor, and they will do what you want, and you can make as much profit as you want. They want to throw us into a new neo-feudalism, into a new feudal society, where there's a few at the very top who have enormous quantities of wealth, and everybody else is living in fear and terror. The former employees, including four past directors of the Park Service, wrote, and I quote, "We are seeing evidence at every turn that when private for-profit interests vie with resources of the park, the private interests, and not principal, governs." And they go on to point out how the administration's so-called Clear Skies initiative has undercut the Clean Air Act, and that efforts to open up traditional Park Service functions to private contractors squander money and staff resources. The Washington Post. The headline on that article, by the way, was "Ex-Park Service Workers Say Bush Reneges on Promises."
Now that's a new one. I never thought of that.
Well, yes, it's a possibility, yes. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, if you'd like to be on the program. And Roy in Rio Rancho is on. Roy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Roy.
I was watching C-SPAN's Morning Journal this morning, and the guy from New Republic was on there, and I thought it was very interesting. Laura Flanders preceded him, and, of course, she was just dissecting the Halliburton no-bid $100 billion, you know, just, I can't even comprehend these numbers, Tom.
Yeah.
But she was kind of poking that and everything else. Well, the fellow from New Republic comes on, and the way it's being spun is Bush is showing a great deal of political courage because he knows that everybody's going to be picking on him, saying that he's given these no-bid contracts to all his buddies. And so This is a sign of courage.
Oh, my. He's noble to give to his buddies like this.
And he's so brave because everybody's going to be picking on him for giving his buddies these contracts.
That's incredible.
That is an illogical logic.
Yeah, now I noticed.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I noticed on the front page of the New Republic, or on their actually on their email thing. I'm on their email list. I also subscribe.
Right.
There was this thing where they were basically trashing Dean and trashing Kucinich and it really frankly surprised me. And were they talking about that kind of stuff on the air?
Right. And the headline of the new article or the new magazine was how the personal hate toward Bush and how this was just so terrible and how it had just reached new levels of this personal hate and how it just wasn't fair. It just wasn't fair that everybody would be this personally hateful of Shrub. Oh, I'm sorry. Resident Chief and whatever.
Roy, you'd asked about the numbers. We're just running out of time here. Let me just give you a quick one. The cost of the war in Iraq so far is $71,133,986,000. That would allow 7,183,655 additional children to attend a year of Head Start. It would allow 21,778,000 children to be provided with one full year of total health care with no deductibles. It would provide for the education of 967,809 additional school teachers being hired for a full year in the United States. It would pay for a full four-year scholarship at public universities for 1,288,770 American children. It would allow us to take 12,700,002 cars and convert them to natural gas or low energy usage, and it would build three quarters of a million affordable housing units for the poor. That's what the cost of the war in Iraq so far, only $71 billion, would be. Roy, thanks for your call. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Mike Molloy Show.
Well, let's move on to somebody who is evil but very bright. That would be Ari Fleischer. At the briefing today,
the job of anybody who is the White House press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking and why he's thinking it. And that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, right. The job of the press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
When do I get to my Game Boy? Hey, it's time for lunch. I want to take a nap. How do you spell Putin? Let me see. Who's the president of Afghanistan?
You know he tried to kill my dad?
Oh, my God. There's Laura with my milk. Faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
Alrighty, then.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Chat room this afternoon, we have Hopeful House, who says that in Seattle, when George Bush showed up to speak, the protesters outnumbered the supporters, and they herded them into a free speech zone a quarter mile away from the event. Hopeful House says, saw the limos going around back to drop off the fat cats and speakers. But they certainly weren't available to the protesters. 1-800-TALK-YES is the number, 1-800-825-5937. And Tim in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Oh, Tim didn't stay on the phone. He just wanted to make a note here. He said, also with the war money, $400 billion hybrid car infrastructure could have been used for. And so, you think of what $71 billion that we've spent so far on the war in Iraq, and what it could have been used for. And in the meantime, while we're building, now here's the ultimate irony. Bush and his buddies are talking about, you know, in his speech where he could have said, I want to talk to the Iraqi people. Please don't shoot our troops. They're coming over there to liberate you. Instead, he said, I want to talk to the Iraqi people. Do not destroy oil wells. And then he goes on to say, because they represent the wealth of the Iraqi people. So we're instituting socialism in Iraq. We're going to give the Iraqis free medical care, free health care, fully funded free health care. We're going to give them fully funded free education. We are providing them with power. There's no viable system there to track the costs to recover it from people. And yet, here in the United States, and we're providing them with a society where they can have free speech. Democracy. And yet, in the United States, if you want to exercise your free speech rights within a half a mile of George Bush, plan on being rounded up at the end of a baton or a gun and put into a cage called a free speech zone. We can change this, folks. We can change it. Tag, you're it. Now, carry the message on to others. We need to spread the word. Share the message. Wake people up. If you're not registered to vote, get out and register, because change is coming. Thanks. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining us today. Our program was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson in Georgia, engineered by Steph Stryker and Jay Bilecki in Detroit. Thanks for joining us. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. Exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Copyright 2003. Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES. Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative. Uh-oh.